I'm Peter Solomon. It's the morning show on Listener Driven Jazz 88. I am joined today by Sput Seawright. He is one of the percussionists and band leaders of the group Ghost Note. They're coming to Minneapolis to play two shows at the Dakota on Friday the 17th. And they've got a recent recording out called Mustard and Onions, which we'll be talking about listening to a little bit from. Welcome, Sput. I wanted to ask you a little bit about the history of your group. Now, I know you and the other percussionist band leader in your band met while you were playing with Snarky Puppy. What was your first response to meeting another percussionist in this large ensemble of Snarky Puppy, and how did you guys come to the decision to form a group together?
Yeah, it's been almost 20 years ago now since I first came in contact with the pups, the Snarky Puppy guys. And yeah, my first show, I was invited. I met the bass player at a jam session, and he invited me to come hear his band play. The first show immediately stood out to me as like the gigantic percussion rig and all of the things that he was playing. He was moving the band. He was pretty much the attraction. The band was playing some really nice stuff, but like they were very much a fusion band then at that time. And they were playing all kind of syncopated rhythms and complicated time signatures and stuff like that. And he was just on top of everything and playing all of these different instruments that you would normally see on a percussion kit. He had everything up there. And so I was immediately fascinated with him. So when I got a chance to work with the band as a producer on their first record, Bring Us to Bright, on the first record that I played with them on and worked with them with, I studied what he was doing and took a liking to it. And shortly after we recorded that record, I was asked to go on tour because the drummer at that point had left, and that's it. The rest is history. You know, we're in a band playing together now. I kind of knew the music on the keys, but not on the drums. And I got through that tour just being coached by him. And I put backbeat on everything, so it kind of changed the sound of the band. And we've been inseparable ever since, because he was kind of helping me get through the gigs until I learned the songs fully. And we developed a way, a style to play together as four arms and two legs. And I would get a lot of compliments from drummers that would come and see me play on how I was playing. And I would have to immediately give up the secret. Hey, man, he's playing a lot of the stuff that you're enjoying. You know, so Nate Worth is his name, and we decided to create a relationship musically and in life. It's been a great journey, you know, and I started taking solos with Snarky Puppy, and I started including him and asking him to play with me, and we would find ways to play where we'd sound like we had been playing for so many years together. We'd finish each other's sentences pretty much, so it was cool, yeah. And so that just led to us wanting to do a record. And we did our first debut record called Fortified. And I guess it came out like 2015 or 16 or something like that. And people asked us to tour it. And it was just me and him. So we had to collect guys and to start a band so that we could tour the music. And it just evolved to what you see today. So
what has the difference been between being in the supporting role of a rhythm section in Snarky Puppy versus being co-band leaders and percussionists in Ghost Note?
I don't think the role itself has changed. We're still a force that really, in Snarky Puppy, we were just a force of rhythm that we imposed our will on that band. We had a lot of fun. You know, it's a little different now because it's more of a collective. And it's more than just two percussionists, you know. It's like three guys playing percussion and three drummers as well now. But when it was just me and Nate, it was just us, and we had full reign. We were doing all the arrangements ourselves, and we were kind of coming up with things on the spot sometimes just by communicating on the bandstand. So in our band, we kind of still do that. We still do exactly that, and kind of force the band to kind of think creatively and always be on the toes, you know, because we're always superimposing and reinforcing change and stuff like that.
I was wondering if you could kind of address some of the influences. Now, some of them are pretty spelled out, like the first track alludes to JB. It's obviously James Brown. Can you talk about that and some of the other streams that have kind of informed the way that you're playing the music on your latest release?
I mean, as drummers, I think the number one influence is probably hip-hop. J Dilla. Found ourselves obsessed with J Dilla. I've always been obsessed with him as a producer and as a musician. I think we have to start calling him a musician because he's a musical genius. The way he used time to create grooves that were off the grid but still made you dance was very fascinating for me. We always ended up trying to mimic him together. We were both into him together. So I think hip-hop would be the first influence. And then, obviously, as drummers, we were influenced by music that drummers really drove. And funk music would probably be the one. So the Clyde Stubblefield and Jabbo Starks, which is the drummers for James Brown, would be like a heavy influence. So that would be James Brown and then Prince. You know, from the area. Yes. You might be familiar with that guy. He's one of my favorite drummers. People don't really recognize him as a drummer, but all the drummers that played in his band kind of took a page from his first records where he was actually playing all the instruments. And Sheila E. sounds like Prince on a lot of the records that she played with him. And on her own, she sounds totally different. You know, John Blackwell as well, on a lot of the records that he played with Prince, he sounded like Prince playing drums. And Prince and Morris Day sound pretty similar as drummers. So those are my favorite drummers, you know, my favorite style of drumming to play. So we kind of took a liking to that. Tower Power, David Garibaldi, Sly and the Family Stone, Gregor Rico is playing with, you know, Larry Graham. But just down through the years, there's just been guys, you know, and I would say two people that really remind me of me and Nate and have to be influenced is Steve Gadd and Ralph McDonald, who was a percussion and drum duo. We used to take solos together all the time in the 70s, playing for Jug Mangione and other artists in the 70s that they were working for. And just seeing those old videos where they were like going back and forth and playing together is really fascinating. And I think we took a page out of their book.
I wanted to ask you about some of the guests you brought in for the album. So if you could talk a little bit about Eric Gales, he's featured on Grandma's Curtain.
Eric Gales is a well-known blues musician. He's actually more than that, but he's known in that field of music. He's an awesome person, first of all. Just an awesome story of a person that just got music to save his life. Literally, if you don't know his story, you should go check his story out. He travels all over the world sharing his own personal music, and down through the years, he's just fascinated with life and loving and living life. He has a beautiful wife, and he's just a big fan. Yeah.
Now you have another iconic producer working with you and bassist, Marcus Miller.
Yeah, Marcus Miller is my hero. I got a chance to play with him and travel and tour with him on a Renaissance tour from one of his records, and I learned a lot. I sat up under him, and man, we had some really cool times together and memorable moments. And I always told him that I wanted to do something with him. And so when we wrote this song, I tried to write the melody. It was written in a different way, but I tried to demo the melody in a way that I could hear him doing his thing to it. And if you would hear that demo, it would be very hilarious. But he came and he knocked it out the park, and it's just an honor to have a person like that. He's a very big influence of mine as a producer and as a band leader. And watching him and sitting under his tutelage every day was like a history lesson. My life was changed being under his leadership. So.
And then finally, I wanted to ask you about Carl Denson. I have a friend who's like really into funk, and he describes Carl Denson as like having the power of a Mack truck, but he's playing flute on your recording.
Yeah, this is the second record he's played on. I played in his band too, the Tiny Universe, and he's been one of my favorite musicians. He's also a band member he's the saxophone player in Sexual Chocolate on Coming to America. As we joke about that all the time, and he's the biggest Kansas City Chiefs fan, and we talk music and sports, and he's just another one of those guys. He's the OGs that taught me a lot, and I try to put him on everything, every record. At least his flute playing is amazing.
So, like, what sorts of things happen in the live shows that don't necessarily happen in the studio?
Oh, well, live show is totally different. I mean, because the band is, we're a live band, you know, and if you like the studio record, then it's a lot of effort for us to compact, because now we're writing fixed material. We're writing things that are going to live for a moment in time. That's the beauty of creating and going in the studio. But when it's time to play live, the music grows legs. We take the material and we try to expand it as much as we can, depending on the energy of the crowd, on the audience. And we have fun on stage as well. But we're just, you know, the musicianship in the band is high level. And every weekend I can fall off a cliff and these guys will be right there to catch me. And it's just an amazing feeling to have. It's just a bunch of kegs of dynamites ready to explode at any given time. And we're all up for the challenge. You know, I love James Brown, so I kind of take the James Brown approach and call things out on the spot. And the band just, they follow it and they listen to it. And if there's a mistake made, sometimes we embrace the mistakes and it becomes a whole different groove or a song. And it's just fun. It's fun to have fun with music that you're very familiar with.
Is there anything else you'd like to say in advance of your appearance in Minneapolis?
Yeah, we're looking to share this music and gain a bigger fan base. A lot of people, you know, we're choosing. We're taking a chance here. A lot of people have abandoned funk music, and a lot of people don't see that as a way of life, especially touring. There's not a big audience for it because of pop music is different. It's not a lot of variety as, it's not as much variety as it used to be in the 80s and the early 90s. But I do feel like there's a place for it, and there's an audience, and people love to dance still. And if people give it a chance, I mean, we'll rock your socks off. We'll give you some steps and some moves to groove to. And I just want to encourage everybody to check it out and give it a shot. see if we can gain as many fans as we can.
Spud, it's been a pleasure talking with you. You can catch Robert Sputz, C. Wright, Nate Worth leading Ghost Note. They'll be appearing Friday, May 17th for two shows at the Dakota. Thank you so much.
Thank you.